Hello and welcome to the Chase Down podcast. My name is Carter Rodriguez, that podcast part of the Blue Wire Network. Could never leave that off. You're not currently hearing the dulcet tones of Justin Rowan because he's off douching it up in Mexico, going up to swim up bars and who knows what else. But to help me fill the gap is a friend of the pod, Ty Windisch. How you doing?
I'm doing well. I join you in hatred of anyone who gets to go to warm weather at this time of the year in the Midwest. I can't stand it. I don't want to hear about it. Usually I'm that guy. I'm trying to be a good friend. Like, oh yeah, tell me about your trip. Right now I'm like, no, I don't care about your trip. I don't want to see any pictures. I'm still here. It snows every 3 days. I'm over it.
Let's just say if I hear Justin say all inclusive one more time, this podcast is over. But Ty, you're of course the host of Eurostep, also on the Blue Wire Network, covering the Milwaukee Bucks, who are maybe the best team in the league.
Maybe.
I've been thinking about this, and obviously the Warriors are better.
Yes.
But does it feel almost to you like how good the Bucks have been has kind of snuck under the radar? Because yeah, it does to me.
I know, 100% it does. I mean, I need to write down the stats. I keep seeing it. I keep not writing it down. But their net rating right now, I think, is like plus 9.5 or plus 10 or something. And if you look at all the teams who have ever done that, it's like, I don't know, 14 or 12 or something. Like 8 of them have won the title. A lot of the other ones went to the finals and lost. I think only one didn't make it to the conference finals ever in NBA history. And this team does not play in a particularly great conference anymore. LeBron is gone. And like, they're very, very good. And they're good at all sorts of different things. They have the best defense in the league. They have a top four offense. I mean, which means they're fourth, obviously. But they have one of the best players in the entire NBA. And for my money, easily the best player in the Eastern Conference, in Giannis Antetokounmpo. They're very, very good. And I think a few things work against them. People don't like Chris Middleton. People say they like Chris Middleton, but they don't really like Chris Middleton.
Oh, I like this take. This is a good take. I think you're accusing me of something, but I
don't know. I don't know what your takes are.
My take is exactly what you just said it is. He's like the ultimate guy you trade for in 2K, but also you don't love him as much as you should.
Right. Chris Middleton is like the girl next. Chris Middleton is the first wife in Wolf of Wall Street. Like everyone's like, oh, yeah, of course you want Chris Middleton. And then this Margot Robbie comes along and everyone's like, oh yeah, we don't forget Chris Middleton. Like Chris Middleton is nothing. Like we don't need this guy at all. Like we have Margot Robbie or I don't know, like Brad Beal or something. And it's like, listen, Brad Beal is also great. Chris Middleton is still like, we've come full circle. He was like underappreciated early because just no one like knew who he was.
Then he got a little overappreciated.
Yeah. Now. Then Basketball Intelligentsia was like so high on him and like, oh, Chris Middleton's so great or whatever else. And now we've come all the way around to now he's actually an all-star.
Dude, I love
him on a 47-14 team. And people act like he is like a 14-point-per-game player who has a nice, like, I don't even know what the favorite advanced stat is these days. True shooting percentage, which he does, but he doesn't score 14.
Can I note that I love saying Basketball Intelligentsia? It's my favorite way to shit on Twitter.
Yeah, there's nothing better. Twitter needs to be, like, put in check. I do this sometimes, too, like, it's just so easy for people on Twitter to think that like it matters. And it kind of does. Oh, like yeah. People get like jobs and stuff, I guess, but like opinions on Twitter largely just don't.
Like, yeah. I think it was actually, we had Snotty on a couple, like a month or two ago. And we were all talking about how we found ourselves arguing less on Twitter than we ever had before.
Yeah. Like, cause it's unimportant.
Yeah. You just kind of start realizing you're just shouting into the void. The Bucks have scored over 140 points 3 times in the last 9 games and at least 130 4 times in the last 11, I believe. And it's funny with this team because I think we talked about this earlier in the year. I was really anxious about how their scheme might hold up in the playoffs. And as a Cavs fan, and most of our listeners are Cavs fans, so you know they don't have a ton of like respect for Mike Budenholzer in the playoffs. And like, I think I am finally ready to stop comparing those Hawks teams, especially that first Hawks team that won 60 games and was so impressive to this Bucks roster. And I just think this Bucks roster might be transcendent. And I just don't even know how to process that within the grand scope of things. Cause this is what we expected from the East, you know?
Yeah. No, I think so. I'm glad you brought that up because I've been meaning to write about this for a while and I haven't gotten to it yet. If only because it's hard to fit into a headline. I've been like, how do I make that? Like, these Bucks are not those Hawks is just a shitty headline. But these Bucks are not those Hawks, and there's some differences. First, before I even make this, like, before I address this comparison, I do want to give a shout out to those Hawks. Who my thought about that team and those Hawks teams in general was always. Like, I think Bud is doing terrific work, and he's getting by far the most you could get out of those players. Like,
oh yeah, I don't think that was ever in question.
Well, then it's weird to me that that's like an obvious fact, and then people also now look at this roster, which is much much better than that roster, and go, well, yeah, they're just going to blow up in the playoffs too. Like, no, those Hawks lost because they didn't have a star.
I think the schematic stubbornness also was a factor. I mean, that team's defense should have held up better than it did against the Cavs in the postseason, don't you think?
I mean, probably, but I think a lot of it was. I know,
but the
Cavs
were also all-time great, and I think a big thing on that end is a lot of people don't want to recognize those Cavs offenses as being all-time great.
The East is underrated.
Yeah.
I think it's not as good as the West, and it hasn't been, but sure. Like, people look at the East and think it's like literally like a league you get relegated to. Like, it's not that bad. Like, there have been good and especially one before this year, one great team in the East recently, those Cavs. I agree with you.
Yeah, it's one of those things. I mean, we always talked about how the Cav team, we would hype up potential Cavs conquerors, and then once the Cavs beat them, we'd say, oh, well, they weren't shit anyway.
Oh, for sure.
I do want to pivot this Bucks discussion from one comparison that I don't think is apt, which is the Hawks one. I think the Giannis thing is so different, and I mean, the Hawks never were this good, and they were never this good independent of context. You know, it wasn't like, you know, the Hawks kind of had to play their style to be successful. They had to be. They couldn't have any, you know, any cogs that were amiss, whereas this Bucks team feels so much more versatile. My question to you, Ty, is could they be more in the realm, and this is a comparison I have not seen made once, could they be more in the realm of the 2015 Warriors?
That's the one I like. I wish I'd written this. You would have seen it one time. That's the one I think is actually accurate, because you're seeing a team, I won't say do things that we haven't seen done before, because obviously like the Rockets have done this before, but I think you're seeing a team be able to shoot this many threes and also be this good defensively, which is pretty much really hard to do outside of like the Warriors. And you're seeing one guy who was like acknowledged as very good and who all of a sudden is just like the best player in the league this season.
Yep.
And no one really is ready to admit it yet.
And both teams upgraded from
a coach holding them back. Yeah, to a coach who just perfectly from day one realized what this roster could do and does more with it. And I think, like, I don't know who the Draymond is, like the third guy. Maybe Eric Bledsoe.
Brook Lopez.
Brook Lopez might be it. Listen, Brook Lopez.
Well, think about this. They did stumble into Draymond that year.
Yeah.
In a way that, like, I think in Mike Budenholzer and the Bucks front office's wildest dreams, they did not expect this from Brook Lopez.
No, I would say not. And really,
I mean, obviously, that's like now we're stretching it, but
I mean, DJ Wilson looked like he was going to be like, DJ Wilson is good. Like, he's not playing, he's not really ready yet. But and I sound like just like the paranoid Bucks guy, and I have had some coffee tonight, so that kind of is feeding into it.
Yeah, man, you're flying, bro.
I know, I'm all over. You're gonna have to adjust my levels later, but DJ Wilson is good.
Yeah, I mean, this whole roster is really good. And this was kind of I remember we talked about this on the front end of the year, Justin and I, and it was just, my whole thing was like, okay, so this Bucks team, we all acknowledge that Giannis is great, so we can all agree there. Everyone seems to agree that Chris Middleton's really good, okay? We all seem to agree that a bunch of their periphery players, like, you know, Brogdon, Bledsoe, Brook Lopez, all these guys that, you know, we ostensibly seem to like as players. So if they came out flat again, we would have to reevaluate something, because the biggest excuse in the room was gone in head coach. but we didn't even have to consider it because this team is outrageous. Sometimes it is that simple. You know, you change a few peripheral roster pieces. Who was starting for them at center last year? Was it Maker all year?
Oh, no. It was Henson. It was Henson, yeah. It was largely Henson.
Yeah, and it's just sometimes it's as simple as this coach does not fit or is not of quality, which was the answer for the Bucks. And Budenholzer is just really, really good. I don't see how anyone else can win Coach of the Year.
No, I mean, I saw people floating Nick Nurse for a while, and
it's nice idea, but it doesn't hold up. And the only other candidate for me would be Mike Malone.
Yeah, I mean, Malone should get consideration.
It's the number one seed in the West, but when you just, I mean, I'm just going like straight Bucks ticket like this year. If I had award votes, like Giannis is my MVP, and my Coach of the Year is Bud, because like that marriage has just been so lovely. And I think the encouraging thing is the stress for me for this team was their defense. But even if that Brook Lopez led defense doesn't hold up, which by the way, he's playing good defense, which is kind of crazy. Sometimes it is as simple as just simplifying a guy's responsibilities.
Do you want a hot take?
Yeah, I want to hear it.
I think he should. He should. I don't think he'll get it, but I think he should have like second team all defense consideration at this point.
Well, I got news for you, Ty.
Yeah,
he's not going to get it.
He has 15 blocks in his last three games, and he anchors the best defense in the league. Listen, I'm not saying. I'm just saying.
Do you really think he anchors the best defense in the league? Yeah,
I think Giannis is probably the best defensive player, but like Lopez's responsibility there is huge, because the Bucks thing is like, I don't know if you saw Ben Falk had a really good piece at Cleaning the Glass. Like, they give up a lot of threes, but they purposefully like funnel it to the bad three-point shooters on other teams. Like, they actually don't give up a lot of threes, like, as when looked at against the rest of the league, to good shooters. They just make bad players shoot. But well, really,
this was the Cavs' whole playoff strategy for like the entire second LeBron era. They would say, yeah, Lance Stephenson, do you want to shoot a three? Marcus Smart, do you want to shoot a three? And then, you know, as usual, Twitter just talked about how many open threes they gave up and very rarely looked at who was taking them. But even so, are you worried about at the next level in the playoffs going up against some of these guards who can pull from three off the dribble? But really, I guess when you look at it, it's just Kyrie, right?
Yeah, pretty
much.
Who
else scares you in this dropping scheme?
No one. I mean, the thing
Kawhi
is like,
maybe a little.
Well, Bledsoe is so good that he's not going to make it easy even for Kyrie to pull up from three. And Kyrie's going to get a lot of pull-up twos. Like, that's people are going to overreact to that, I think, right away, because he's going to get a lot of those looks, because that's just – like, every defense gives up something. That's what the Bucks give up. I mean, they're going to let you take those almost all day long. Bledsoe makes it tough. I mean, the Bucks probably have, like, three guys who could get, like, all defense consideration. Eric Bledsoe's point guard defense this year has just been – ridiculous. I doubt you watched Bucks Kings the other night, because God, why would you?
I did not watch that.
Why would you do that? But De'Aaron Fox, with the game tied, the end of regulation, had a possession. It was just like, you know, I don't know, like 19 seconds left, and Bledsoe just put absolute clamps on him. Like, he couldn't do anything. He's been so good. But Bledsoe will do that. But then Lopez's rim protection has been really what's huge for them. I mean, I'll have the number up in front of me in 1 second. He's holding opponents to 11.7 percentage points worse than normal within 6 feet of the rim. They're shooting 50% there against Brook Lopez. Like, he's been terrifically good as that rim protector. Like you said, just keep it simple and box off the rim. That's all they need him to do. But they're going to give up a lot of pull-up twos. Kyrie's the one guy who could really make them pay for that. But I think you kind of just have to roll the dice on that and try to not give up a ton of open threes to their good three-point shooters.
The encouraging thing on that front is that ultimately this is not a team that only wins with their defense.
No.
And in fact, I think in the postseason, we're gonna see them lean more into the offense with the lineups they choose. Would you agree with that statement?
I don't know. I think Bud will like to play good defense still. I think that's a focal point, but they have the option to, like, if it's not working, they can just, I mean, I guess their offense is already kind of, I mean, their lineup is already kind of optimized for offense, but I mean, they can throw in Mirotić for Lopez if they really want to start gunning.
Yeah, I guess that's fair. And even then, like, that's just, in a lot of ways, that's its own defensive decision, depending on schematically what you're trying to do. Like if you do want to just play Giannis at center because they are running Lopez off the floor in certain matchups, it's not the worst choice. I'm looking at the Bucks, and I'm hopping all over the place because I just find this team interesting. And you're laced up on coffee, so you're ready to go.
Yeah, I'm so ready for this.
looking at the Bucks cap figures moving forward. By the way, paying Larry Sanders through 2021, Cavs legend. And other Cavs legend Spencer Hawes through 2019. I didn't even realize you stretched Spencer Hawes.
Yeah, I was actually against that move when they did it because I didn't think it was worth the gain right away, and I think I was right.
Yeah, I mean, $6 million year salary cap just going this year going to Jody Meeks, Spencer Hawes, and Larry Sanders. What a time to be alive. How would you pursue – how would you proceed with this offseason, with this roster moving forward for the Bucks? Just for a brief rundown, Eric Bledsoe, unrestricted free agent. Malcolm Brogdon, restricted free agent. Chris Middleton has a player option he will certainly turn down. Mm-hmm. Mirotić, unrestricted free agent. Lopez, unrestricted free agent. That's the entire core of the team.
Yeah, outside of Giannis, of course. Of course. So I think they're going to wait till the playoffs before they decide what to do, which I think is smart. Like, I think if John Horst, quote unquote, knows one way or another right now, he's making a mistake because obviously this team is this good in the regular season. But I mean, if they really hit a tough wall in the postseason, like, I don't know, it's risky to bring back the same group, especially, I mean, Bledsoe is going to be 30. I mean, Middleton is still, I think, in his prime. Like, I think they bring back Middleton almost no matter what, but I mean, Lopez is kind of hard to bring back because they don't have his bird rights. They can't go over the cap to sign him to a normal deal. They probably have to mid-level exception him, which kind of stinks if he wants to go somewhere else and get paid.
The nice thing about Lopez is that he has made money in his career.
Yeah. He had a huge
Nets older. Contract,
didn't he?
I'm sorry?
He had a huge Nets contract, didn't he?
Yeah, I think I think he had at least one big cash out.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Nets were paying him like $20 million a year.
Oh, yeah, that's right. So, maybe he'll want to stick around. I mean, I don't know where he could possibly do better than he does in Milwaukee right now in terms of playing that money. So, but basically, sorry, to answer your question, they have two options. Like, they could bring back pretty much everyone. I mean, George Hill is gone. They can't afford that cap hit. But
And they'll get a lot of savings for cutting him, and those savings will help them afford Middleton.
Yeah, I mean, they can go over the cap to keep pretty much. I mean, you sign Lopez first, they could go way over the cap and keep pretty much everybody. One thing I've floated for a while is like tossing you guys, being the Cavs, like Snell and Dante DiVincenzo for JR just for the contract, because that would free up a lot of money. Even if they did want to keep the team, if the owners didn't want to go stupidly into the tax, they could do that to try to save some money that way. Yeah,
it's such a weird spot because this isn't. This isn't the same dilemma as the Sixers have, though both teams at the end of the year will be looking at these kind of enormous cap figures if they bring everyone on their teams back. But like, this Bucks team is so much better than the Sixers are right now. So it's like, it's so hard to walk away from that. But conversely, the Sixers are at least re-signing to sign pseudo stars, how much tax can you pay for Malcolm Brogdon and an Eric Bledsoe? Two guys who are good, but, I don't think they're quite on the Tobias Harris, Jimmy Butler level.
Well, I mean, I think it's easy to say that, but, I mean, the team with the Brogdon and Bledsoe and Middleton is the one winning all the games.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying that. That's what makes it hard. They're better, but the pedigree is worse.
Right.
Roster, and I don't know quite how I would proceed. I mean, if I can afford it and I can make those kind of cost cutting deals that you'd suggest. By the way, give me Dante 10 times out of 10. Plus Snelly. I like Tony Snell.
Snell can play. Listen,
one
I'm not
time,
trying to
Tony.
I'm not trying to just dump Tony Snell. I like Tony Snell, honestly. I would rather get rid of Ersan, but Snell makes like $4.4 million more, and that kind of stuff matters. But
it's got to happen.
Yeah. But they could make max room if they wanted to and keep Middleton and Brogdon. That's if something flamed out and like Giannis like worked the phones and called people from the parking lot like Draymond did back whenever that was, 2016.
Uh-huh.
They could theoretically, let's say they do that deal that I pitched earlier I think they lose like $10 million off the cap when you account for the partial JR figure. You let Bledsoe, Hill, Mirotić now, and Lopez go. Probably, I mean, maybe you can keep Lopez too. They could open up like 33 or more million room while maintaining Middleton and Brogdon's cap hold. So then you go way over to keep that team. But theoretically, you add some star and you keep Middleton and Brogdon, which is a lot of firepower.
Who would you be interested in chasing in that context? I've long been partial, and I don't think they should do this because it's probably not fiscally responsible and not on the right timeline and probably not worth it given all you have to give up. I've been long partial for a Kemba Giannis combo.
Kemba's one of the ones I think that's one of the more realistic ones, Kemba.
I don't know if he's worth – you're basically trading all these guys for Kemba right to pay him a ton of money into old age for a guy who's going to fall off a cliff before the end of his next contract.
I mean, sort of already did since he got, an ankle injury early in the season. He has not been the same guy since he came back from that.
It's hard being 5'9".
Yeah, it is.
Listed at 6 foot? Because that's disgusting if so.
NBA heights are the biggest lies on earth.
Oh, yeah.
And what gets me is the tall guys who lie and say they're shorter.
You know what might be the bigger lie than NBA heights or NBA weights?
Oh, yeah.
Because they don't check. Because those are actually variable, and there's no way they're updating that shit. It's whatever they weighed when they were a rookie.
Yeah, I mean, what's LeBron listed as?
He's listed at 230 or 240.
Yeah, if it's 230, I'm not buying it.
I'm pulling the old girl up right now on
didn't he just say he's like 280?
Yeah, he said apparently it's reported he's playing at 280. He's listed at 250. At 6'8", 250. He's definitely at least 6'9" and 270.
Well, that's like the thing that keeps like Zion will be like the second heaviest player, and it's like, well, not really.
Yeah, listed. But even so, then that means holy shit. Yeah, but going back to this Bucks team, they're just really interesting. And, you know, I think I'm just ready to move past the skepticism and into full-blown, this is going to be fun.
I have a stat for you based on your Warriors comp.
Oh, hit me.
14-15 Golden State Warriors net rating of plus 10 that regular season. The Bucks so far this season, it actually has dropped a little, plus 9.3.
Wow.
It's like it's very rare to be plus 9. Like it sounds like it wouldn't be that hard, but it's
how many games did the Warriors win that year?
Like 67.
They didn't win 67 the first year, did they?
It was either 63 or 67.
I'm thinking the year they broke out.
67, yeah.
Yeah, wow.
They were really like they
were really good.
Yeah.
People forget cuz remember when the Cavs put their team together, when they traded for Love, I think they were like the heavy title favorites.
Yeah, they had to have been, right?
And I think the next, it must have been OKC next.
Them and like probably like people were still probably high on the Spurs.
Yeah, Spurs had just come off the title.
And Kawhi had become a star.
Yeah, and it really did feel like going into that season that they were about to waltz to something close to a title. Like, yeah, we had to see Love and Irving prove it, but like no one saw this shit coming. And no. I don't think anyone honestly could tell you they thought the Bucks were going to be a 60-win team.
No, certainly not. I think Bucks people were like, they could probably win 50, maybe 55.
What percentage of you is concerned that this season has been a little bit of like fool's gold in some capacity?
I don't think I'm worried about being fool's gold. I mean, they have to prove it in the playoffs. That's obvious. That's worth saying, but I don't know. I mean, they've beaten all the best teams in the NBA. They haven't lost to anyone twice all year. They haven't lost back-to-back games all year. Like, I just wonder, like, once they've played, you know, how many, 61 games so far, I think. Yeah. Like, the sample size is not small anymore. Like, they're still killing teams. They're still very, very good. The only thing I'm worried about is Giannis's tendonitis. He missed a game, and it's not anything new for him. He missed a game. He's on a minutes restriction at that Kings game, and I think they're probably just being careful with him, which, I mean, they should. Like, most of these games really don't matter anymore, but that's the only thing where I'm even a little worried about, but I'm not, like, I follow a lot of people who are more plugged into the team, as in, like, reporting on than I am, and no one seems like overly worried about it. So I'm not even real worried about that.
To be clear, I meant going into next year. What does this team look like? How worried are you that after next year, all of a sudden we look at this, that team, like, how the hell did they win 66 games last year? Like, if all these guys are on the periphery, just stop being so insane.
I'm not super worried about it. I mean, like, I think Bledsoe's playing a little bit above his normal station for the contract year, but I also think, like, he's never been on a team this good before, and I think that kind of helps too. Like, I think when you're on a team that's this good, like, the peripheral guys just get better as part of that. Like, it's energizing, it's exciting. Like, I mean, freaking Leandro Barbosa was, like, an important player on that first Warriors team, and he was out of the league pretty soon after. Like, it's just, it helps to be on a team that good. It helps everyone. But, like, I think Middleton is genuinely this good. I mean,
Middleton actually is one of the few things where you can look at next season and think, yeah, he's going to be better.
Yeah, I think Brogdon, because
he went through big slumps for stretches. Brogdon's averaging 16 points a game, dude.
I think that's unusual.
That's really, really good for a third-year player.
He's 50-40-90 right now.
God, man. He kind of lost his last year due to injury, right?
Nah, Middleton. Middleton was hurt a lot.
Well, wasn't Brogdon, like, banged up all year, and it just wasn't quite as good, quite as effective?
Oh yeah, I'm mistaken. Yeah, Brogdon missed a lot of games last year. That's also true. Yeah, they only scored 13 points per game, and I think Philly still hates Malcolm Brogdon. I think they always will. But I mean, yeah, he shot 45, 40, 86 his rookie year, and honestly shot 48, 38, 82, 88 last year. So the guy is efficient.
Yeah, I mean, he's really, really good. I'm excited to see Nico get ramped up as well. We know you're going to be stressed heading into this postseason, hoping the Bucks don't pull a Hawks. And life can be stressful. Getting life insurance shouldn't be. That's why there's Ethos. Ethos is a modern kind of life insurance that's super fast, incredibly affordable, and very uncomplicated. At getethos.com, there's no medical exams for policies covering under $1 million. No hours of paperwork or meetings with pushy representatives. No one likes a pushy representative. It only takes 10 minutes to apply, and you can rest assured knowing you've taken steps to protect your family. And in most cases with Ethos, you can have that peace of mind for less than a cup of coffee a day with no hidden fees. Having life insurance can free you from stress. Getting life insurance shouldn't cause it. Discover how uncomplicated life insurance can be at Ethos. Get your free instant quote and submit your complete application in just minutes. Just go to getethos.com. That's ETHOS. Getethos.com. Getethos.com. But let's move off the Bucks here and jump right into kind of where the playoffs are shaking up, because here is an unpopular, ooh, scorching, it's really not that hot of a take. I think the East playoffs in the first round are actually going to be pretty all right.
Oh,
Your thoughts, Ty?
Yeah, I think 1 and 2 will be kind of boring, but the 3-6 and the 4-5, the 4-5 might be like one of the best series.
Could be a bloodbath, man.
if those Pacers hold on to 3, this is the like absolute perfect scenario. I've towed it around for a little bit now. So let's say the Raptors get really hot, and I mean, it's the regular season. It's the only time they thrive. So let's say the Raptors, Kyle Lowry does regular season Kyle Lowry stuff. The Bucks give Giannis some more games off. The Raptors pass Milwaukee for number one, which is very unlikely. The Bucks have a little lead and they have the tiebreaker. But let's just say it happens. Bucks are 2 seed. Let's say the Pacers hold on to the 3 seed, which is not entirely unlikely. I mean, they're good. They've been slumping lately, but they're still pretty good. And they have a little lead there. So if that happens, Philly and Boston play each other in the first round, and then whoever wins that has to play Toronto in the second round. So you're looking at the Bucks. Bucks play the 7th seed, which is like the Pistons. Huh. And then they play the Pacers, who are good, but not as good as those other teams. They don't have stars, and that matters a lot in the playoffs. There's a route to a team. It's probably more likely going to be the Raptors, which sucks, but there's a chance for a top 2 seed team to only have to play one of the top 4 teams in the East, the real top 4, sorry, Indiana, to make it to the finals, which is enticing.
Yeah, just looking at this slate, first off, I think the 4-5, as long as if the Pacers hold on to the 3 spot, that 4-5 matchup appears to be better than any matchup the West has to offer in the first round. And can I get on my soapbox for just a moment?
Sure.
Because I am kind of over all this, the bitching and moaning about Eastern Conference first round series, as though 98% of those in the West are not completely unwatchable too. Tell me you're gearing up for Nuggs Clippers. tell me you can't wait to watch the Spurs slop up shots against the Warriors. Like, it's the 7-8 seed, dude. It's not supposed to be that good.
Like, yeah,
supposed to be lopsided, you morons.
I don't think the West is as deep as everybody says.
Like, I think the West sucks this year, dude. I am so anti-West. There are three teams worth a damn in the West. Maybe four.
I'd say four.
Who?
Warriors, Thunder, Rockets, Nuggets.
Dude, I can't wait for the Nuggets to lose in the first round if the Lakers make it into the eighth seed.
Man, that would be...
Dude, I would put down... There is no amount of money you couldn't convince me to put down on the Lakers to win that series against the Nuggets. And I think deep down, you might agree with me. Your thoughts?
You know, I think the Nuggets would win. But
It wouldn't be easy, bro.
I think the series... Either... I think whoever wins the first game would win the series.
That's a regular season ass team.
Yeah.
Your Denver Nuggets.
Let's not say my Denver Nuggets.
Oh, it's just collective. Your.
Okay. I want to give Jokic and the boys a shot. I think they have a good team.
They have a nice regular season ass team.
They have a strong team. I could see them falling for Hawks syndrome. But I think Jokic is better than anyone on those Hawks teams. So I don't know. I think they'd have a shot. I think
they haven't made the playoffs once yet. So
they've been together for 2 years in this current, and they were one game away.
They probably should have made it then.
Yeah, they should have. Why am I caving for the Nuggets?
I don't know, because I'm being too mean about it. I really don't think anyone. I think there's. If I had to break down the talent tiers in the NBA right now, tier one on their own is the Warriors. And then there's three East teams. And then you can throw the Celtics in with a bunch of these other losers in the West.
I think the Thunder are really good.
You know what? I'm just not ready to forgive the Thunder yet. I think everyone else is ready to forgive them. But I remember that series last year. I remember ESPN tweeting about how Russ Westbrook got his numbers after all against Ricky Ruby, Westbrook followed through on his promise to lock down Ricky Rubio in a 20-point loss. I remember how ugly that series was, and I love Paul George. I'm one of his biggest fans. I had an entire Twitter thread related to trying to will my way to getting him to Cleveland.
Ooh.
But, like, I haven't forgiven him for that yet. And if they play a disciplined defense, I don't think they're going to win.
I like Paul George so much. I like Jeremy Grant.
Me too. I like all these guys. And it just it's too easy to imagine game six, they're on the brink of elimination. And they go 6 minutes without a field goal.
Yeah, because Paul George touches the ball once in those 6 minutes.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
It's just too easy for me to imagine. And, like, it's not that I don't want to believe, because I actually really like watching them play when things are humming. But I think a big part of it for me is I got to see the other guys on the roster. Because, like, Russ is going to do Russ stuff. You can win with that or you can lose with that, whatever. It's like, is Terrence Ferguson going to hit some out-of-rhythm threes? Yeah. You know, like these weird peripheral guys, like, that's where I'm interested. Who did they sign off the buyout market?
Nader.
Markieff Morris.
They have Abdel Nader playing minutes for them, blows my mind.
That's weird. But every time I ever watched him play, I always thought, I think that guy might be able to play.
I liked what I've seen from him there.
Yeah, he looks good. And I just want to see him. All I want to see, like, if it's game two of the playoffs and I'm seeing those guys splashing some threes off some driving kicks, then I'm like, okay, I'm in. I'm sold. But I just got to see it first.
The fact that they made Dennis Schroeder play well is kind
of
wild.
Yeah. In a lot of ways, I'm just like, I've just become an old man. I just want to see it first. I don't get excited anymore. I get excited, but like, I'm not ready to like all the way buy in. Who's the team on the periphery of the NBA Eastern Conference playoff hunt that you're actually interested in seeing in the postseason?
Do the Nets count? That feels too easy.
Nets do not count.
God, I have to pick one of these.
Who do you most want to see? Honestly, have you been watching? Because I have an answer.
Give me Orlando.
Yeah, I agree with you, but breakout, why?
I like Isaac's been funky lately. Isaac's been hitting threes, which is big for them. I don't think he'll play, but like Fultz playing in the playoffs would be freaking fun, I think. I'm still a Fultz believer. I don't care. Vucevic is really good. Like, very, very good. Like, I think they should have traded him anyway and maximized his value, but I don't know who really would have given up a lot
I think that's an easy one to say, but when you look at the market, it's not good. I stand for a lot of guys on this team. I love Aaron Gordon.
I'm out on him. He's the one guy where I'm like, eh.
I every time I see him, I think, hey, if you were used right, you'd be great.
Boring Blake.
Oh, come on.
Well?
This is not I stand for him because I think he's great. I just have a fondness for him. I like DJ Augustine. Always have.
Yeah.
Like a great value brand Kemba.
Honestly, I like Fournier. He's way too expensive.
I don't like Fournier.
Outside of his contract, I'm like, he's all right. I don't like his hair ever.
And that throws me. I was actually looking at their box score tonight because they beat the Warriors. And their bench, they only played nine guys in this game. Wes Iwundu, Ken Birch, Isaiah Briscoe, and Terrence Ross. And I just thought, if there's ever been a set of bench players that appear to have been procedurally generated draft picks in NBA 2K, that's the group.
The Orlando beat the Bucks without Giannis. They've also beaten Toronto and Golden State this month. And it's like, I was watching their games, and I was like, I barely know who Ken Birch and Wes Iwundu are, and I have a pretty good grasp on obscure NBA players. And they're, like, effective. Like,
the true NBA wilderness.
Yes, but somehow it's coming together in Orlando.
Yeah, I mean, they're not good, to be clear, but, like, if I have to watch a team get their face kicked in the first round, I'd so much rather watch a team with all these young guys with some pedigree and see them tested and see them try to figure some stuff out than watch like Kelly Olynyk and like, you know, and Josh Richardson on the Heat, or
at least they have Justice.
Brad Beal just slopping stuff up.
At least the Heat have Justice Winslow and I like Derrick Jones Jr.
I don't know if you saw my tweet about this a month or so ago, but it was like, if Justice Winslow had taken as many leaps as Heat Twitter has thought he has taken leaps, he's a nice player. I'm not getting out of bed to watch Justice Winslow. Come on.
No, but I'd take him. Like, miss me with the Pistons.
Dude, I still kind of love Blake Griffin.
I like Blake too. I don't want to have to watch him slog through this bullshit.
Yeah, but it is depressing to watch the Pistons and watch him on that team specifically.
He hates everyone on that team. You can't convince me otherwise.
It's pretty clear.
You took this guy from playing with Chris Paul and DeAndre Jordan, and you replaced them with Reggie Jackson and Andre Drummond. You think he's not in hell? Come on,
Detroit.
Listen, I'm not. I try not to diss Midwest.
It's not Los Angeles, though.
It's not.
No one's here to diss Detroit. We can objectively say that Blake Griffin would have rather worked in Los Angeles.
Although I have heard that he enjoys being like the guy, not on the team. I think he hates that. That's not source, but I have heard he like in the city, like he's like very famous in Detroit, and
that's nice.
Well, like, obviously, he wasn't, like, he was.
Well, that's surprising, since I've never seen a fully occupied Little Caesars Arena.
Well, I like comedy clubs. He's famous. I don't know. I didn't report this myself. Someone told me this, and I was like, oh, it still sucks for him.
By the way, got a lock for the playoffs for next year for you, and Ooh. It is your Atlanta Hawks.
Probably.
That team is awesome. That team, Trae Young, when he is orchestrating that offense, they generate a good three-pointer every other play.
They have good players.
Like they have a lot very good players. They're just they have a lot of young guys playing heavy minutes, and then they've just got a few weird spots. But these guys can freaking play, dude.
Here's a couple of numbers. The Hawks have 20 games left this season. 7.5 games back of the eighth seed.
Man, if anyone could make a push, and I think they want to make it, because it's worth noting they only bought out Jeremy Lin. They kept their other vets on the roster. They didn't trade like a Dwayne Dedman, who can play, by the way.
Everybody wanted him. Every contender's fan base was like, let's just trade nothing for Dwayne Dedman.
Yeah, well, he's in this weird nebulous middle ground of like, he's like the only discount unicorn that exists. Yeah. He's the only rim protecting 3-point shooting big that is not like a star.
Yeah.
Is there even another facsimile? I mean, Brook Lopez is close, but Brook Lopez has been like on a tier, several tiers higher than what Dedman can provide. I can't even think of anyone else that
I think
does
one. I got to look up to make sure. Oh, no, I'm wrong. He doesn't hit the threes. Never mind.
Who were you thinking?
For some reason, I thought Kylo Quinn had added a little bit of a
Kylo Quinn has the big reputation. Well, yeah, he can chew a little bit, but Kylo Quinn is on the all we pretend that he's better than he is because we saw him on some shitty teams.
Yeah. Yeah. Pacers people like him.
Yeah, I'm sure they do. Everyone always likes him, and then he doesn't play.
It's true.
All right, man. Well, I just thank you so much for joining me to kind of run through the Eastern Conference and break down the Bucks, who are just a freaking joy to watch. I really do think that team deserves a little bit more attention. But I think, you know, they'll earn it if they play well enough in the postseason.
That's true. Can I leave you with two Cavs takes?
Oh, hit me with two Cavs takes. We barely talked about it. By the way, we'll talk more about it on Monday for a more Cavs-focused podcast because Jetty went nuts again.
I'm still on team. Like, I think Jetty could actually become like a one- or two-time All-Star player. Oh, I'm still there.
Still my heart.
Big wings who now, as you informed me on Twitter, now can handle but can shoot, move around well. Like, there's a floor for those guys. Like, the absolute worst you can be is like Jeff Green, who's not even that bad. But that's like the absolute worst if you can do those things. And Jeff Green is like the most inconsistent person on it. The real floor is probably like Rudy Gay, who, again, Rudy Gay is good, especially right now. Rudy Gay can play. So I think Chetty has especially if he stays on Cleveland in the East, I think he's got a future. And I've come around on the sex man.
You guys come around on the sex man.
In the Discord have convinced me that you know what? I'm not done. I'm not sold, but I've moved away from like shorting the stock and like dumping all my stocks in the sex man. I'll hold a couple shares long term.
I appreciate that, Ty. Thank you so much for coming on. Thank you so much for kissing our listeners' asses with those takes to endear yourself. Hey, everyone, please listen to the Eurostep. It's dope. Ty's dope. One of our best guests. Again, wish Justin Rowan luck as he goes snorkeling or some shit like that in Mexico. I'll be picking up on Monday for a Cavs-focused podcast. Please, if you're interested in supporting the podcast, which you've made it all the way to the end of the episode, so you must be, please rate and review the podcast on iTunes and, of course, subscribe. Thank you very much for listening. And as always, go Cavs.